Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Morning, we're reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 12, Chapter 3, Text 22. Tapasaccha dayadhaneshu, tapasaccha dayadhaneshu, aram braspati vapare, himsatushchandritadveshe, Dhammasya Dhamma Lakshanai. Tapa of austerity. Satya. Truth. Daya. Mercy. Danishu. And charity. Ardham. One half. Raspati. Diminishes. Vapare. In the age of Dwarpa, Himsa, by violence, Atushti, dissatisfaction, Anrita, untruth, Dveshai, and hatred, Dharmasya, of religion, Adama Lakshanai, by the qualities of irreligion. Translation. In Dwarpa Yuga, the religious qualities of austerity, truth, mercy, and charity are reduced to one half by their irreligious counterparts, dissatisfaction, untruth, violence, and enmity. Translation, everyone together. In Dwarpa Yuga, the religious qualities of austerity, truth, mercy, and charity are reduced to one half by their irreligious counterparts. Dissatisfaction, untruth, violence, and enmity. I'll read a few verses here. Yasmino maha shila spadhyaya jayane rata adya kutumbino rishta varnakshatra vijotara. In the Dwarpa age, people are interested in glory and are very noble. They devote themselves to the study of the Vedas, possess great opulence, support large families, and enjoy life with vigor. Of the four classes, the Kshatriyas and the Brahmanas are most numerous. Kalo tu dharma paranam turiyam so dharma he subi. Eramanai chiyamano yante so pi vinankshati. In the age of Kali, only one fourth of the religious principles remains. The last remnant will continuously be decreased by the ever increasing principles of irreligion and will finally be destroyed. Text 25. Tasmin lubda durachara. Nidaya shushkavayina durbhaga buri tashrascha sudra doshatara praja. Translation. In the Kali age, people tend to be greedy, ill-behaved, and merciless, and they fight with one another without good reason. Unfortunate and obsessed with material desires, the people of Kali Yuga are almost all sudras and barbarians. Purport. In this age, we can already observe that most people are labourers, clerks, fishermen, artisans and other kinds of workers within the sudra category. Enlightened devotees of God and noble political leaders are extremely scarce, and even independent businessmen and farmers are a vanishing breed as huge business conglomerates increasingly convert them into subservient employees. Vast regions of the earth are already populated by barbarians and semi-barbarous peoples, making the entire situation dangerous and bleak. Krishna conscious movement is empowered to rectify the current business state of affairs is the only hope for the ghastly age of Kali Yuga. So, the deterioration of the ages. Now, Bhumi Gita, this chapter, Bhumi Devi, is she begins to in the beginning of the chapter. She is speaking the song of the Bhumi. She is saying. And Sukadeva Goswami is he is answering here to Maharaj Parikit's questions for a description of the ages and the qualities of the ages and what happens in the ages. So briefly, and Sukadeva Goswami in this section anyway, because in the other chapters there is also a description. In other Puranas there's also a description of the different ages. And more or less the same things are described. Sometimes a little difference in the detail, because after all, there are many cycles of the ages. 1,000 cycles of the ages, of the four ages, in just 12 hours of the day of Brahma. So many cycles of the ages. From one age to the other, there may be some slight difference in the detail, but generally the same things are going. So therefore, those who are learned wise, or those who are Chiranjeev, live for a long time. There are many who are like the Chiranjeev, they live for many thousands of the cycles of, I think it was mentioned earlier that from the last age, the brother of Maharaj Santanu, what was his name, Devapi, and another king, have already taken their birth to begin the next Satyayuga. So they have, it is mentioned that they have great mystic power and they are remaining incognito in one village and just absorbed in yoga. And they're just waiting till the end of the age of Kali to again start the next Satyayuga. So, so how long is the Kali Yuga? It's 432,000 years. So they're practicing the mystic yoga for 432,000 years. So that's something we ourselves, you know, if someone in the Kali Yuga, someone goes for practicing yoga, if they do for 5 or 10 minutes, that's a long time. If they do half an hour or 1 hour, it's a long time. Now, just our devotees are going, I was talking to Dr. Adrian, he's going down to the Buddhist center, the outside of the Bendigo. And so they're having 1 month long retreat at their center. And they asked us to do the catering, to supply the breakfast and lunch. So they're staying, Adrian is staying there, other devotees are staying there for 1 month, catering to them. And they'll be doing their programs there, they do their meditation. So 1 month long, but I don't know if it's continuous. But here it seems from the descriptions in the Srimad Bhagavatam and other Puranas also mentioned that Devapi and I think the other one's name is Maru or something. They are waiting. what's his name? Santanu was the brother. Maharaj Santanu was Devapi's brother. Maharaj Santanu was in the Mahabharata from Krishna's, before Krishna. And he was the father of Bhishma Dev. So that's a long time. That's in the last, this is in the Dwapara Yuga. So Devapi is there from then. They're from the last age. And so how long is... So they're from the last age. And if I'm not mistaken, I think that Devapi was the elder brother also. I could be mistaken. I think he was the elder brother. But anyway, so they're from the last age and they're sitting in the description. Is there. Of course, we read that at the end of the Kali Yuga, Lord Kalki would come because the people would be so deteriorated. Now here we read that how in the Satyayuga, how the people were. Practically, there were no classes. All one class. All like all very even Brahman and above Brahman. So like absorbed in self-realization was their main activity. In other Puranas, I was just reading Agni Purana and other Puranas, also there's a description of the people of the Satyuga. There was no difference in the people. They were all very high souls, self-realized souls. And everything was just a very nice situation. There was no disturbance as far as Adibhautik and Adidaivik, Atmic disturbance from the natural, the weather disturbance. Or there was profuse abundance of eatables. I read in one of the Puranas that there would be some type of juice that would come from the earth, just naturally, and they would drink that and just be nourished. But mainly they were just absorbed. So there was no classes, and the classes started to come in the next greatly. Mainly, they were like the Brahmanas. So the good qualities of the truthfulness, cleanliness, mercy, austerity. Here is a little bit slightly different in the description. The charity is said here instead of cleanliness. In the first canon of the Srimad Bhagavatam, the four principles of religiosity, one is the cleanliness, truthfulness, cleanliness, mercy, and tapa, austerity. So these qualities in themselves are not spiritual in themselves, but they are used. If they are used in the spiritual pursuit, and they are very conducive for spiritual advancement. Therefore, when Prabhupada, when he accepted someone for initiation, he accepted someone as a disciple, he would say that you have to follow chanting 16 rounds of Japa, Hare Krishna mantra every day, and follow the regulative principles of what is one? One of the regulative principles.
No
meat eating. No
gambling.
No intoxication, and no illicit sex. Now, why? Because these things break these religious principles. This has been explained here in the various chapters. These things break. The austerity, tapasya, is very good for spiritual advancement. Tapasya. When one practices tapasya, just like the brahmacharis, the brahmashrama system, the brahmachari, vanaprasthas, everyone actually, even grihasthas, they will practice the tapasya. And by practicing tapasya, you become very strong in your determination. And very strong, you'll be very strong in your focus. When there's no tapasya, then one cannot be very determined. One cannot be very focused. One is splayed in many directions. So to be splayed in many directions is not very good for spiritual advancement, because it's not an easy path for spiritual advancement, especially in the Kali Yuga. Not very easy. It can be easy if you surrender fully, but who is surrendering fully? So generally, Prabhupada actually explains in Bhagavad Gita, one of his purports, is the path of self-realization is undoubtedly difficult. It's not easy because of the atmosphere, and especially in the Kali Yuga, the atmosphere that everyone is engaged in sense gratification, so many things, so many allurements of this. So it's not easy to stick on the path of true spiritual advancement. It's not easy. It's difficult. But therefore, if one doesn't practice tapasya, austerity, then one doesn't practice the cleanliness, then even your own body, your own mind will be disturbed. You're not clean. Your body will give you so much problem. So it's already difficult enough for that, your body on top of you giving so many problems. Okay, if one doesn't practice the cleanliness, one doesn't practice the truthfulness. Now, of course, the truthfulness, the relative truth and absolute truth, but even in relative truth, practically in the, we're seeing that truthfulness, everyone is, how many people are actually truthful, even in a social sense? How many people tell lies all the time? But to be truthful on the absolute level, it means understanding your position, understanding the position of the Supreme Personality of God, acquiring the knowledge that is needed. That is actually absolute truth. So truthfulness, and then of course mercy. If you don't have mercy, if you're not kind to living entities. So these things are broken. So what is breaking the truthfulness? According to the regulative principles. So many things can break truthfulness. But according to our regulative principles, what is the principle that is, if you break it, it will break your... break your truthfulness. The gambling and so much speculation, isn't it? As I mentioned here, the Kali Yuga people become very greedy. The greed principle is becoming more and more strong. So greedy, gambling, speculating, no end. They become obsessed with these things. So when you become obsessed, and then just greedy, when you become very, very greedy, you will not be able to maintain your truthfulness, because you will do anything that is required to get what you want out of greed. Now the greed actually is mentioned here, one point is mentioned here, the dissatisfaction also is mentioned. One is not satisfied, automatically you'll be greedy, because greedy, you're not satisfied, they want more and more. If you're satisfied, you're just satisfied. You don't have to be greedy. Even the littlest thing will satisfy you. But when you're not satisfied, then even the greatest thing will not be enough. You want more. You won't be satisfied. So you'll be greedy. So this we're seeing, especially in the Kali Yuga, in the first few verses we read was about the Dwapara Yuga. Not so bad, but the Kali Yuga especially, the greed is, but you can see it everywhere, feel it everywhere. The greed, everyone is so greedy. So the gambling, all these things leads to the greed, leads to breaking the truthfulness. And what breaks the cleanliness according to our regular principles? Promiscuity, in illicit sexual activities, that is causing the diseases, that is causing so many problems. So that is broken. Of course, so many things can break the cleanliness. Prabhupada would say, of course, the people don't wash their hands, even going after going to the bathroom, isn't it? Actually, he requested that we have to take the shower after you go to pass. So that is considered, people don't do that. And after eating, they don't wash their hands, they don't wash their mouth. Now I noticed there's a campaign on, I don't know, by the government or someone, that to clean your teeth after eating. Someone told me that they said it was a TV ad or something. TV ad. There's a TV ad that especially at night, if you eat at night, say, brush your teeth, because the germs will remain in your mouth all night and will grow and multiply. So even on the level of washing your mouth, brushing your teeth, but the illicit sex is the greatest breaker of the cleanliness. But there are so many other things. So these things are broken. So Prabhupada, and all the acharyas wanted these things follow. The cleanliness, and they said you have to avoid the prohibitive things, otherwise they will break. So therefore, if one is serious about spiritual advancement, and only one is serious, can one be initiated, and one has to take the vow of following these things. No gambling, no illicit sex, no intoxication. What does the intoxication break? The tapasya, taking intoxication, drinking the alcohol, taking so many drugs, you can't control the senses. The coffee gets you all worked up, isn't it? The caffeine gets you especially, if the children are taking it, they become all hyper. So even those things, and if someone may I remember people would say to us, it's a little severe, isn't it? You don't even drink the coffee. You know, people have to have their coffee. One tradesman was telling me, so unless I drink about 3 or 4 cups of coffee, I can't get myself going anymore. So I have to get up early in the morning and then get up. And that's all he said, that's all I have. I just have a couple of cups of coffee, and then during the day I have a few more. I don't eat so much either. I don't eat so much. I just drink a lot of coffee, and that gets me. Then they got all these drinks that are filled up with a lot of caffeine as well, right? high concentrate of the caffeine, red Bull and with them. And all of a sudden, you're a little bit down, you drink it more. But these things are temporary, and actually they drain you, they get you going, but in the long term they drain your system, drain it. So I want to speak of these things like that, which are just a slight compared to the alcohol, the heavy drugs and all these. Totally dependent, lose all control, so the austerity is gone. You lose all control. And you see those who have become dependent, cannot live without them. They lose control of their lives. They live for that thing. But therefore the austerity is broken. Therefore Prabhupada said, no, don't take these things. Don't have the illicit, don't have the intoxication. Don't gamble. And then the mercy, of course. You know, you're eating everything. And I've also read that in one other place in the Bhagavatam where the meat eating also destroys austerity. Because you're eating meat, you're eating anything, you've got no control over the senses. You just eat everything. But certainly mercy is destroyed. You know, people are just killing, and they don't even think about it. They just go to the supermarket or the butcher, or they just buy whatever they want to buy. Don't even think some poor animal will be getting killed. Some poor animal, millions and billions are getting killed just so you can eat. You don't have to kill so many animals just so you can eat. You know, the farmers, everyone in the industry, of course. I was talking to one of our devotees in New Zealand who used to, he inherited his family's sheep farm. And all the siblings had different properties. So he got 1,000 acres and had so many sheep on it. And he ran it for a while. He's out of it now. He ran it for a while. But he said, when I was running it, I saw the other sheep farmers. And I was shocked to see just how many sheep they were killing just at the drop of a hat. That even some little sheep looked a bit funny out of it. Had a wobbly leg or something, just kill it. And then so many little young lambs that they didn't really need. They had a certain, some were used for the wool, some were just slaughtered for the meat. The cows also, the same, so many animals. So people, so this meat eating, and it's so pervasive everywhere. You know, just think about how pervasive these things are. Now these things are permeated by, especially in the Kali Yuga, by Kali. Just think how pervasive intoxication is. Now, people can't go anywhere without taking some intoxication. You know, any social function. We're having a celebration this weekend. You're all invited. It's at my place, and we're going to have a big barbecue. And of course, they're drinking the beer. They're having they're doing the sausages or the steaks on the barbecue. And that's their celebration. Isn't it? That's their celebration. They're celebrating, drinking the alcohol, the beer. Now, all over the world, this has become more and more. And India now is becoming so much meat eating, intoxication, so much than before. One devotee told me he's from the Brahmin family. He went back to his village. He's been living here in Australia for the last 25 years. He went back to his village. Practically no one was eating meat in his village. He said, now everyone. After 20 years. He said, everyone, the whole village, even the Brahmins. So India now. India, up to 50 years ago, maybe just 20% were eating the meat. Maybe 80% were the vegetarians. Now is the other way. Maybe 80% are the meat eaters and maybe only 15-20% are vegetarian. In India, the place that's supposed to be the place of the Dharma. Isn't it? So India is becoming more than the others. And then they say, Swami, why we are suffering? We are the land of the Dharma. Why we are suffering? Oh, well. Stop eating the meat. Stop taking the intoxication. They're drinking and eating it. You see, sometimes they're drinking now like anything. Especially the young generation. Young generation. Maybe the older. And hardly you see anyone in dhoti or sari. When I was first going to India, just in the early 70s, everyone was wearing dhoti. But they're still in the ladies still wear sari. But even that's disappeared. But hardly you see any gentleman wearing a dhoti. You go India now. No one wears dhoti. Maybe in the South India somewhere, you see some elderly gentleman, they were still walking with the dhoti. But you go India now, practically everyone, 95% is no dhoti. No culture is lost. Maybe we'll imitate the West. Dress like them, eat like them, drink like them.
So British bring the culture to India.
Huh?
British rule the India, then everything changes.
Yeah, everything. So it is an unfortunate thing. So now we have here the description that in the Dwapara Yuga, the good qualities are reduced by half. In the Treta, it was reduced by one quarter, we read earlier. One quarter, all these principles of the truthfulness, cleanliness, mercy, austerity are reduced by one quarter. In the Satya Yuga, they are full. In the Treta Yuga, they are reduced all by one quarter. And in the Dwapara Yuga reduced by one half. But still, even so, reduced by one half, still it is mentioned here, the people in the Dwapara Yuga, they followed the Veda. They were noble. They were mainly Brahmanas and Kshatriyas. Now, as I was saying, in the Satya Yuga, there was no classes. Everyone was like practicing the meditation and mainly interested in it. So there was no classes as such. But the classes started to develop in the Treta Yuga, as mentioned here. And mainly they were Brahmanas in the Treta Yuga. There must have been some Sudras, but mainly they were Brahmanas. Now in the Dwapara Yuga, of the Varna and Ashram, the most of the population were Brahmanas and Kshatriyas. Some Vaishyas were there, some Sudras were there, but mainly is the Brahmana and Kshatriya. Now in the Kali Yuga, it is said, mainly they will be Sudra and Barbarians. Barbarians means that doesn't follow anything. Sudra would be part of Varnashram. But now you can see that really, you have your worker class, and they are the strong ones. And mentioned in other Puranas that the Sudras will be the most powerful. In the Satya Yuga, everyone the most powerful, everyone was in the Satya. And in the Treta Yuga, the Brahmins are the most. In the Dwapara Yuga, Brahmanas and Kshatriyas would be very powerful. And now in the Kali Yuga, the Sudras are the most powerful. They control everything. They got all the money. I just read an article, interesting article, that if you're a cook or a kitchen hand or do the laundry on an offshore rig somewhere, you know, in many parts of the world, you earn more than the Prime Minister of Australia. Now, there was an article, there was a list. Who owns it? The Governor General is the top. She's on about 400,000 a year. The Prime Minister's on 300 and something thousand. Then it went through all the different top positions in the politics. Then it said, what is the wage of the cook and the kitchen hand? On these oil rigs and places like that, they're working so many hours. They're not so long, but good hours. They're on like 400,000 a year. The cook. One devotee just told me his daughter's working up in one of the mines. She's just a secretary to one of the, she's a PA to one of the executives. She's on 250,000 a year. Up in Port Hedland. Mm-hmm. Right, and the husband's also working there, and he's working they live in the town, but he's on some huge. And if you're a heavy machinery, you know, you drive the big front end loader or any of those, you're on $300,000 or $400,000. They're making more money than the executives. Those people are making more money than the professionals. Generally speaking. So these are the sudra, but everyone is the sudra class. Even the Vaishyas, there's no mention of Vaishyas here, but the Vaishyas now, Ridananda makes a good point here, and he says that the Vaishyas, they're not really truly Vaishyas. They're actually kept people. You see? A true Vaishya was independent, self-reliant, you know, doing the agriculture, doing the business. Now everything is... Everyone is dependent on each other. Just like in a modern system in the world, and everywhere's going the same. Although one devotee said, still in Mayapur, if other areas, if there was a problem, some floods or some drought, in some other areas away from Mayapur, still around Mayapur will be alright because we have our own, we're growing our own vegetables here. But you know, just like in Australia and in New Zealand, they had that. I guess it was in Christchurch, they had the earthquake there. In Australia, we had the floods and everything. He said that when the floods were there, no one could get any food. The supermarkets went bare. So everything collapsed. The things, unless they started to get everything in, because now everything's hooked into each other. It's all a centralized system. Everything's trucked to one place, to another place, grown over here and trucked over there. There's no self reliance. Business is all hooked in. That's why when we had the financial crisis that everyone's still going through in the last 2 or 3 years, right? The big meltdown, all stemming from America. They're taking bad loans and whatever, and so the whole world was affected. It started in one place, but everyone was hooked in. China was giving the loans to America. You know, all the banks were hooked in. They had the shares in these places. You go through the whole thing. Why the whole world suffered? Because everything is hooked in. The banking system, the internet, everything is hooked in. So actually, there's no real vices. They're all kept people. So really, even though they're qualified in as far as education and everything, because they're kept people, all dependent people, they're actually in the sudra category. You see? Because the Vaishya was independent. Shudras are kept people. Brahmana is independent. Kshatriya is independent. Of course, there was some, you know, relationship between all the Varnas and the Ashramas. There was a relationship. But they were self-sufficient in their own caste, in their own occupation. But because the system is today and becoming more and more so, the whole globally, everything is hooked in. If something goes wrong in one place, all the world suffers. If there's flood or there's drought or there's fire, there's earthquake in one area, everyone suffers. Just like the bananas. Now I read that just in the big hurricane came through up there, and the cyclone, what was it? Yasi came through up in the far north Queensland, wiped out Innisfail and a few towns up there. Now all the bananas went up to $20 a kilo. Why? Because 90% of the bananas are grown up in Innisfail area, right? The bananas and the mangoes and all those things, they're grown in that area. So the cyclone came through, finished everything. They say it'll be 2 or 3 years that all the crops are finished, and it'll be 2 or 3 years before they get back on the feed again. The whole country has to suffer. So everything is hooked in. So this is a good point by Ridananda Maharaj. It's all an artificial system, and as long as it's this consumer type society, it actually started in America. I read a big long article. It started after the Second World War. And where the coffers were depleted in America, and some politicians and some business leaders actually had meeting after meeting how to kickstart the American economy again. And so we'll get people buying, we'll create, we'll manufacture things, and we'll get them consuming. And this was their system. As long as everyone's in their cycle, then we'll get everything going. So then of course, in American society, the greed became strong, and it wasn't enough just to have more and more and more. So then this consumer society has gone right around the world now. Everyone's hooked in, totally dependent. Even the farmers, and the other point that you know, the amount of meters. Even the farms, and you see this, especially I saw in America, that there are so many farms, they're actually owned by big corporate companies. I don't know here in Australia, I think it's coming a little bit that way also. You go to big farms, there's hardly anyone on there. There's just like a one man, he's the manager, and he's got a couple of assistants, and it's all mechanized. They've got these big, huge machines, and it's owned by some big company listed on the stock exchange. You know, whole vast tracts of California, for example, vast tracts, you know, thousands and tens of thousands of acres owned by companies. And you've got one manager with a couple of assistants, and they get on their big tractor and they work the whole thing. So it's not the little vaisha doing the agriculture, self-subsistence, sells a little bit extra fruit to the market, the local market, you still see in India. But in many countries, I saw in Europe also the same system, huge tracts of land owned by one company. And it's becoming more. They're buying up more and more and more. It's just a business to them. They're not even there. They're somewhere else in New York. The executives are sitting in some big high skyscraper building in the middle of the city somewhere. They don't even know. It's just numbers on a computer screen. And they just they add everything up. Is it good or not good? We'll sell. We won't sell. Like that. So everything has become like that. But this is not. So there's no true vices anymore. Save and except a few places in the world. Maybe in some of the poorer countries as going in South America, Indonesia, I still see it, Asia. But especially the Western countries have been becoming more and more combined. So really that class is disappearing. Certainly in the Kali Yuga the Brahmanas are gone. What Brahmanas are they? True Brahmanas. Brahman. Now, who are the true Brahmins? This is mentioned in Bhagavad Gita, Samudama Tapaso Cham Chanti Adhima Veva Chaya. These qualities are mentioned in the 18th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Samudama Tapaso Cham. He's got all these qualities. He's austere, he is truthful, he is charitable, he's got all the nice qualities. So, where are these Brahmins? Nisoriyam Te Jodhidhidhaksha, and then the Kshatriyas. Where are the according to the qualities as given by Krishna in Bhagavad Gita? Where are the true Kshatriyas? Where is the true Vaishyas? Have we just been talking about the Vaishyas? Even the Sudras, they would serve the others and follow their instruction. So really, there's no real Sudras. They're more like the barbarians. Barbarians. It's mentioned there. Living very barbarians are like a very animalistic type people. So they live kind of like a polished kind of animal life. Because human life begins with the Varnashram. And this is not done. So this is the deterioration of the ages. Satyuga, very good. Treta, good, a little bit down. Dwarapa Yuga, half. Still they were noble, following the Vedas. Now in Kali Yuga, who follows the Vedas? Who even knows of the Vedas? Who even knows of these things? So, now as mentioned here in the last verse, people will be greedy, ill-behaved, and have no training. Prabhupada used to tell us, the problem with you is that you have no training, he used to say. When he saw his disciples not following properly, or they were muchi. I told the story one time of Harisuri. He told me this story. He went in to give Prabhupada his lunch, and he noticed that the salt, Prabhupada liked fresh salt every day. So he noticed that the salt was on the table from yesterday, so he went and he took it out. And then when he was carrying in, he was carrying some other things, and just a little bit of his finger went in the container of the salt. So he thought, he knew Prabhupada's standard. So he thought that, but he was in a hurry because he knew Prabhupada liked to have his meal on time, not late. So he thought, well, I'll just give it to Prabhupada. And Prabhupada was looking at him the whole time, and he put it down. Prabhupada looked at him and said, "You are a lecher." Because he put his finger in the salt. He dirtied the salt. Prabhupada was going to put that on his. But he put his fingernail considered very dirty when they go in the salt. So this was Prabhupada's standard. Because it's quite radical what people say, just on the salt. Right? So what is the actual standard? I mean, so Prabhupada would say it was, and he said, you have no training. You have so many bad habits. You have no, I am trying to train you, but still I see so many bad habits are coming. How many bad habits? Now, so these are some of the ill-behaved, merciless. We've already talked about fight with one another. Now, it is one statement in the Shatra says, in the Kali Yuga, the age of quarrel, wherever there will be two people, they'll be fighting. Wherever the two people will be together, they'll fight. Just like, let's say, for example, suppose you have your best friend. Your best friend in the world, and you go away together. You go on a retreat. You think that after a week you will not have had a fight? Even with your best friend, what's to speak of your enemy? And actually, when you read the statistics on violence and murder cases, the police always look at the family and friends first. They say the statistics are like 80% of these crimes of violence and murder are committed by those close to the victim. Supposed friend. You read this all the time, isn't it? The two friends went away, they drank all night, and then, you know, they had a big argument, one killed the other one. Right? Well, I mean, you don't even pay much attention. It's every other day you read it, right? It's not a surprise. It's not shocking. So the friend killed the other friend. What sort of friend is that? He killed him. Right? So this friendship is... So, fight with one another without good reason. Yeah, over the slightest thing, you know. Without any good reason. Just a look. What are you looking at? That'll, the look will do it, right? Why are you looking like that? Even the look will do it. Even the tone of how you said something. Why are you said it in that tone? Fight. The slightest excuse to fight, because there's so much motive passion, this we'll read in the next few minutes, so much motive passion, so much motive ignorance, the slightest that, you know, if someone is agitated, then it's the slightest thing they'll fight. They'll fight with anyone, they'll go looking for the fight. And in a perverted type of way, that's how they enjoy. They enjoy fighting, they enjoy arguing. I'd say, that was a good night. I had a good fight. Right. This is what they think. I got completely drunk. I mean, you know, this so-called Australian culture. One goes out. The good night is you had got completely drunk. You vomited all over the floor. You had a couple of fights, and then you had a good night. Out. Right? Is it? That's the so-called culture. Now it's going there with men, and increasingly women are fighting like anything. So it'll become more and more and more and more and more. Now later on in this chapter, as mentioned, the famous verses are actually later on in this chapter. In Kali Yuga, people's minds will always be agitated. There'll be famine, there'll be extreme taxation. These verses are coming up. But still, it is said, Kale Doshani Virajan, Astega Mahanguna, Kirtanadeva Krishna se Mukta Sangha Paramrajit. But Sukadeva Goswami, he says, my dear king, he's talking to Maharaj Pariksit, he says, although Kali Yuga is an ocean of faults, so many things wrong, there's still one good quality about this age. Simply by chanting Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, one can become free from material bondage and be promoted to the transcendental kingdom. And in the next verse, another famous verse, Kriti Yadgayato Vishnu, Tretayam Yadgayato Makai, Vapare Prachayam Kalota Dari Kirtanam. Whatever result was obtained in Satya Yuga by meditating on Vishnu, in Tretayam Yuga by performing sacrifices, in Dwapara Yuga by serving the Lord Lotus Feet, can be obtained in Kali Yuga simply by chanting the Hare Krishna Mantra. Many verses like that. So, And why are we so fortunate? And now Sukadeva was speaking before the advent of Lord Chaitanya. You know, there's one story. I told this story on Guru Purnima. This is mentioned in the Chaitanya Mangala, Ailochandasta. That one time Narad Muni, he saw the people of Kali Yuga. He was lamenting, oh, poor people of Kali Yuga. They are enjoying it, but no sense for the spiritual advancement. They are suffering in so many ways. How will they attain the salvation? He was lamenting. He was in a little bit distressed. And he went to visit the Krishna in the Dwarka, you know, of the spiritual world, beyond this world. He went to Narad, he can travel anywhere. And just at that time, Krishna had come to visit Rukmini. Rukmini, when she saw Krishna, she was crying. Krishna said, oh, I thought you'd be happy. Why are you crying? Oh, don't you know? She said, I am happy. I'm crying because I'm happy to see you. I have my love for you. I have so much love. Oh, Krishna said, oh, this type of love I want to... I've experienced everything, but the love of my devotees for me, I actually want to experience that. And Rukmini said, ah, if you want to actually experience the love, that the highest position of love, you will have to see Radharani's love for you. That is the highest. So Krishna said, oh, what you have said is very appealing to me. I want to experience that. I want to come, I want to make a form where I can experience. Just at that time, Narada Muni arrived. and Krishna and Rukmini got up and received Narada Muni very nicely. And Krishna noticed Narada Muni was a little bit despondent. He said, what is the cause of your despondence? He told everything on the people of the Kali Yuga on earth. I'm wondering how. And Krishna said, I've just been speaking to Rukmini and I want to taste the love my devotees have for me. I want to experience that. And I will manifest a form that has never been seen before. And just at that time, Ailochandasa Thakura actually mentioned this was the first time in the form of Lord Chaitanya was shown. He manifested the form of Lord Chaitanya. And Narada Muni, when he saw that beautiful form of Lord Chaitanya, he fell unconscious. And then when he was brought back to consciousness by Krishna, again resumed his form of Krishna, Narada Muni said, oh, that's such a beautiful, I've never seen this form. This is the form I will manifest to taste the love that the devotees have for me. And I will come and I will distribute this love freely to everyone. I will distribute this chanting of the Hare Krishna mantra, especially by this means, you know, by this means, people will attain the salvation. So Krishna told Narada, now you go and you broadcast this message to everyone. Narada Muni left and he went to the Brahma Book and he went to the Shiva and everything. Lord will come and I've never seen him before. So by the mercy of Lord Chaitanya, this age of Kali has a golden period. And especially he is bestowing upon us love of God. He is in Goloka Premana, Harinam Sankirtan. He is bestowing this Harinam, this chanting. So here it is mentioned by Sukadeva Goswami also. The Kali Yuga is so many bad things, but if someone takes up the chanting, then one will be promoted to the spiritual kingdom. There's an ocean of fault, but you can rise above it all. Otherwise, there's no chance. You're going to be completely caught up, entangled in the whole thing. No chance. But if you take up the chanting, develop your Krishna, then you'll be liberated. All right, Hare Krishna, thank you very much. Has anyone got a question or comment? Well, now here is mentioned that all the principles reduced by one quarter, not just one. There isn't another section of the Bhagavatam that one by one they go. And truthfulness is the last one of the Kali Yuga, and that's also going. So, but here in this particular section of the Bhagavatam, by one quarter all of them are reduced, and then the Dwapara Yuga by one half all of them are reduced. And then the Kali Yuga, by three quarters, all of them reduced, and then by the end of the Kali Yuga, they all reduced.
So, which means the principles are there, by one
some semblance of the principle, some truthfulness is there, but in Kali Yuga not so much. And some cleanliness is there, not so much. Not like Satya Yuga or the other. So here specifically, it says all of them will be reduced by one quarter, one half, by three quarters, and finally all finished. But I have read that truthfulness is the last one of them. Because in the first canto, there's the story of Kali, the personality kind of beating the legs of the bull, and he's standing on the only on the one leg, and that one leg is the truthfulness, but that is shaking. That is shaking. So that means that that is also, and it signifies that in the Kali of the Kali Yuga. So the one, only one left is the truthfulness, and that is shaking. The others are destroyed. So a little bit different, but anyway, what to say about that? Yes. Someone else? Yes. That's right. Now, from the time of Lord Chaitanya, 500 years. Lord Chaitanya. From the appearance of Lord Chaitanya, it is said that there will be a golden age in the Kali Yuga. It's understood that that start of that was the advent of Lord Chaitanya. So that's 500 years, so there's another 9,500. But that doesn't mean that there will be a golden age. And the Kali Yuga will go on. Only those who come under the shelter of Lord Chaitanya will experience a golden age. Yeah. It's like an umbrella in the reign of the Kali. Anyone who comes under the umbrella will be
ashamed of you. Maharaj, this graduate in Japan, the earthquake, then the tsunami, and then the reactor was going. So, are the barbarians in Japanese material?
All the what?
Japanese. How the. Are the barbarians? What class is called Japanese?
What causes them? I didn't quite hear you. Well, obviously these are reactions due to sinful activities, and all that, and so many sinful activities, and then you're getting reactions. Of course, people don't like to hear that, but we understand. Just like in Christchurch, I told the devotee to be very sensitive. You know, there was a lot of earlier when it first happened. There was a lot of international media there. We didn't want the devotees to be interviewed, and what do you think about this? And then someone says, well, it's all their karma. You know? Not that you have to be a bit sensitive. It certainly is, but it doesn't mean that you just... we understand that there are causes to this, but we want to help with the solutions to these problems. The devotees are very positive. But sometimes you have to be sensitive and not immediately say these things. But we understand this is reactions to sinful activity. These things, and we see they're increasing more and more and more because the sinful activities are increasing more and more. There must be war. Prabhupada said, when, especially calculating, he said, you know, all the slaughter of the Prabhupada said the direct result of that will be war. Will be war. So many wars are a result because you are killing the cow. So many of your young people will be also slaughtered in war. So the direct result is war, and there's the other natural disturbances will be all the other sinful activities. They're coming. They're coming. This is Adi David, please. Oh, they're the Japanese. I see. So there's a connection there. Maybe, yeah. I'm sure that's part of it. Never seen before. Lord Chaitanya performed pastimes. Well, it had never been seen before. You know, meaning the people on the earth have never seen that before. The Lord Chaitanya is engaged in now. At some point, the form of Lord Chaitanya, you have to understand these statements, that when he's performing pastimes eternally, That means that he is eternally performing the pastime. But at some point, the form of Lord Chaitanya was manifest. Just like there's Krishna and Radha, and then at some point, living entities came into existence. But where that point was, who can understand? But therefore, it said that we're eternally existing. But there was some point. The Lord Chaitanya's form was manifest by Krishna, as a description of Chaitanya, at that time. And he said this had never been seen before. And that was in the spiritual world in Andhraka. So at that point, it had never been seen before. And you know, in one sense, and when he manifests, his pastimes are going on eternally. So you know, great acharyas explain in different ways like that. So we tend to think in finite terms. Okay, eternal means there was never a point. But there always was a point. Like when that point was, you can never say, so therefore, there's just a point. Eternal. All right, all glories to Srila Prabhupada ki jai.